Good evening, and welcome to Terror School. Your usual instructor, Mr. Muller, could not be here tonight. Unfortunately, he was trying to blow up a car and burned his lips on the exhaust pipe. Normally, I would introduce myself, but in order to be able to pronounce my name, you would have to be able to swallow your own foot. So you can just call me Dude. Now, I would like to congratulate the survivors of the take-home test on poisoning. Congratulations. Thank you all for being here tonight. And now for our first lesson, terrorism on a shoestring.
Ba-boom, ba-boom, boom. Ba-boom, ba-boom, boom. Life can be extreme, though you've ambitions to be dead extremist kooks. And if you haven't any money for some nukes, here's a little scheme to start. Shoo-bomb, shoo-bomb, shoo-bomb. Join Al-Qaeda's team. The folks will think that you're a suicidal freak. Just stuff your Nike sneakers with a light plastic. Boost your self-esteem, sweetheart. Suicide. Though it has a sulfur sting. Though this bomb is crude, no one will suspect a thing. It smells like airline food. Soon you'll live a dream with 40 virgins who will meet you and you'll see. The only problem is the virgins look like me. That should make you scream, sweetheart. Shoo-bomb.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Axis Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman, and if you're just catching this broadcast, we're listening to Mario Cuomo give the keynote speech at the 1984 Democratic National Convention. He was governor of New York for three terms and explains his views of liberal politics.
We could have brought inflation down that way. How did he do it? 55,000 bankruptcies, 2 years of massive unemployment, 200,000 farmers and ranchers forced off the land. More homeless than at any time since the Great Depression in 1932. More hungry. In this world of enormous affluence, the United States of America, more hungry, more poor, most of them women. And he paid one other thing. A nearly $200 billion deficit threatening our future. Now, we must make the American people understand this deficit, because they don't. The president's deficit is a direct and dramatic repudiation of his promise in 1980 to balance the budget by 1983. How large is it? The deficit is the largest in the history of the universe. President Carter's last budget had a deficit less than one-third of this deficit. It is a deficit that, according to the president's own fiscal advisor, may grow to as much as $300 billion a year for as far as the eye can see. And ladies and gentlemen, it is a debt so large that is almost one half of the money we collect from the personal income tax each year goes just to pay the interest. It is a mortgage on our children's future that can be paid only in pain. And that could bring this nation to its knees. Now, don't take my word for it. I'm a Democrat. Ask the Republican investment bankers on Wall Street what they think the chances of this recovery being permanent are. You see, if they're not too embarrassed to tell you the truth, they'll say that they're appalled and frightened by the president's deficit. Ask them what they think of our economy, now that it's been driven by the distorted value of the dollar back to its colonial condition. Now we're exporting agricultural products and importing manufactured ones. Ask those Republican investment bankers what they expect the rate of interest to be a year from now. And ask them, if they dare tell you the truth, you'll learn from them, what they predict for the inflation rate a year from now because of the deficit. Now, how important is this question of the deficit? Think about it practically. What chance would the Republican candidate have had in 1980 If he had told the American people that he intended to pay for his so-called economic recovery with bankruptcies, unemployment, more homeless, more hungry, and the largest government debt known to humankind, if he had told the voters in 1980 that truth, would American voters have signed the loan certificate for him on election day? Of course not. That was an election won under false pretenses. It was won with smoke and mirrors and illusions, and that's the kind of recovery we have now as well. What about foreign policy? They said that they would make us and the whole world safer. They say they have, by creating the largest defense budget in history, one that even they now admit is excessive, by escalating to a frenzy the nuclear arms race, by incendiary rhetoric, by refusing to discuss peace with our enemies, by the loss of 279 young Americans in Lebanon in pursuit of a plan and a policy that no one can find or describe. We give money to Latin American governments that murder nuns and then we lie about it. We have been less than zealous in support of our only real friend, it seems to me, in the Middle East, the one democracy there, our flesh and blood ally, the State of Israel. Our foreign policy drifts with no real direction other than an hysterical commitment to an arms race that leads nowhere if we're lucky. And if we're not, it could lead us into bankruptcy or war. Of course we must have a strong defense. Of course Democrats are for a strong defense. Of course Democrats believe that there are times that we must stand and fight, and we have. Thousands of us have paid for freedom with our lives. But always, when this country has been at its best, our purposes were clear. Now they're not. Now our allies are as confused as our enemies. Now we have no real commitment to our friends or to our ideals, not to human rights, not to the refuseniks, not to Sakharov, not to Bishop Tutu and the others struggling for freedom in South Africa. We have, in the last few years, spent more than we can afford. We have pounded our chests and made bold speeches, but we lost 279 young Americans in Lebanon, and we live behind sandbags in Washington. How can anyone say that we are safer, stronger, or better? That is the Republican record. That its disastrous quality is not more fully understood by the American people, I can only attribute to the president's amiability and the failure by some to separate the salesman from the product. And now it's up to us, now it's up to you and to me to make the case to America and to remind Americans that if they are not happy with all that the president has done so far, they should consider how much worse it will be if he is left to his radical proclivities for another 4 years unrestrained. Unrestrained. If July brings back Ann Gorsuch Burford, what can we expect of December? Where would another 4 years take us? Where would 4 years more take us? How much larger will the deficit be? How much deeper the cuts in programs for the struggling middle class and the poor to limit that deficit? How high will the interest rates be? How much more acid rain killing our forests and fouling our lakes? And ladies and gentlemen, please think of this. The nation must think of this. What kind of Supreme Court will we have? Please. We must ask ourselves what kind of court and country will be fashioned by the man who believes in having government mandate people's religion and morality, the man who believes that trees pollute the environment, the man that believes that the laws against discrimination against people go too far, a man who threatens Social Security and Medicaid and help for the disabled. How high will we pile the missiles? How much deeper will the gulf be between us and our enemies? And ladies and gentlemen, will 4 years more make meaner the spirit of the American people. This election will measure the record of the past 4 years, but more than that, it will answer the question of what kind of people we want to be. We Democrats still have a dream. We still believe in this nation's future, and this is our answer to the question. This is our credo. We believe in only the government we need, but we insist on all the government we need. We believe in a government that is characterized by fairness and reasonableness, a reasonableness that goes beyond labels, that doesn't distort or promise to do things that we know we can't do. We believe in a government strong enough to use words like love and compassion, and smart enough to convert our noblest aspirations into practical realities. We believe in encouraging the talented, but we believe that while survival of the fittest may be a good working description of the process of evolution, a government of humans should elevate itself to a higher order. We, our government should be able to rise to the level where it can fill the gaps that are left by chance or by a wisdom we don't fully understand. We would rather have laws written by the patron of this great city, the man called the world's most sincere Democrat, St. Francis of Assisi, than laws written by Darwin. We believe as Democrats that a society as blessed as ours, the most affluent democracy in the world's history, one that can spend trillions on instruments of destruction, ought to be able to help the middle class in its struggle, ought to be able to find work for all who can do it, room at the table, shelter for the homeless, care for the elderly and infirm, and hope for the destitute. And we proclaim as loudly as we can the utter insanity of nuclear proliferation and the need for a nuclear freeze, if only to affirm the simple truth that peace is better than war because life is better than death. We believe in firm, but fair law and order. We believe proudly in the union movement. We believe in privacy for people, openness by government. We believe in civil rights, and we believe in human rights. We believe in a single fundamental idea that describes better than most textbooks and any speech that I could write what a proper government should be. The idea of family, mutuality, the sharing of benefits and burdens for the good of all, feeling one another's pain, sharing one another's blessings reasonably, honestly, fairly, without respect to race or sex or geography or political affiliation. We believe we must be the family of America, recognizing that at the heart of the matter we are bound one to another, that the problems of a retired school teacher in Duluth are our problems, that the future of the child in Buffalo is our future, that the struggle of a disabled man in Boston to survive and live decently is our struggle, that the hunger of a woman in Little Rock is our hunger, that the failure anywhere to provide what reasonably we might to avoid pain is our failure. Now, for 50 years, we Democrats created a better future for our children using traditional democratic principles as a fixed beacon, giving us direction and purpose, but constantly innovating, adapting to new realities, Roosevelt's alphabet programs, Truman's NATO and the GI Bill of Rights, Kennedy's intelligent tax incentives and the Alliance for Progress, Johnson's civil rights, Carter's human rights, and the nearly miraculous Camp David Peace Accord. Democrats did it. And Democrats can do it again. We can build a future that deals with our deficit. Remember this, that 50 years of progress under our principles never cost us what the last 4 years of stagnation have. And we can deal with the deficit intelligently by shared sacrifice with all parts of the nation's family contributing, building partnerships with the private sector, providing a sound defense without depriving ourselves of what we need to feed our children and care for our people. We can have a future that provides for all the young of the present by marrying common sense and compassion. We know we can, because we did it for nearly 50 years before 1980, and we can do it again if we do not forget that this entire nation has profited by these progressive principles. that they helped lift up generations to the middle class and higher, that they gave us a chance to work, to go to college, to raise a family, to own a house, to be secure in our old age, and before that, to reach heights that our own parents would not have dared dream of. That struggle to live with dignity is the real story of the Shining City. And it's a story, ladies and gentlemen, that I didn't read in a book or learn in a classroom. I saw it and lived it like many of you. I watched a small man with thick calluses on both his hands work 15 and 16 hours a day. I saw him once literally bleed from the bottoms of his feet. A man who came here uneducated, alone, unable to speak the language, who taught me all I needed to know about faith and hard work by the simple eloquence of his example. I learned about our kind of democracy from my father, and I learned about our obligation to each other from him and my mother. They asked only for a chance to work and to make the world better for their children. And they asked to be protected in those moments when they would not be able to protect themselves. This nation and this nation's government did that for them, and that they were able to build a family and live in dignity and see one of their children go from behind their little grocery store in South Jamaica on the other side of the tracks where he was born to occupy the highest seat in the greatest state, in the greatest nation, in the only world we would know, is an ineffably beautiful tribute to the democratic process. And ladies and gentlemen, on January 20, 1985, it will happen again, only on a much, much grander scale. We will have a new president of the United States, a Democrat born not to the blood of kings, but to the blood of pioneers and immigrants. And we will have America's first woman vice president, the child of immigrants. And she will open with one magnificent stroke a whole new frontier for the United States. Now, it will happen. It will happen if we make it happen, if you and I make it happen. And I ask you now, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, for the good of all of us, for the love of this great nation, for the family of America, for the love of God, please make this nation remember how futures are built. Thank you and God bless.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
You come here and gather around the stage. The time has come for us to voice our rage against the ones who've trapped us in a cage to steal from us the value of our wage from underneath the vestiture of law. The lobbyists at Washington do gnaw at liberty, the bureaucrats guffaw. And until they are purged, we won't withdraw. We'll occupy the streets, we'll occupy the courts, we'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. Our nation was built upon the right of every person to improve their plight. The laws of this republic they rewrite, and now a few own everything in sight. They own it free of liability. They own that they are not like you and me. Their influence dictates legality. And until they are stopped, we are not free. We'll occupy the streets, we'll occupy the courts, will occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. You enforce your monopolies with guns while sacrificing our daughters and sons. But certain things belong to everyone. Your thievery has left the people none. So take heed of our notice to redress. We had little to lose, we must confess. Your empty words do leave us unimpressed. A growing number join us in protest. We occupy the streets, we occupy the courts, we occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. You can't divide us into sides, and from our gaze you cannot hide. Denial serves to amplify, and our allegiance you can't buy. Our government is not for sale. The banks do not deserve a bail. We will not reward those who fail. We will not move till we prevail. We'll occupy the streets, we'll occupy the courts, we'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. We'll occupy the streets, we'll occupy the courts, we'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. We are the many, you are the few.
Jungle camp, there they cooked a stew, and the hungry little kids of the jungle camp said, we'd like to have some too, said we'd like to have some too. Now a deputy sure fired loose at a man, shot a woman in the back. Before he could take his aim again, Preacher Casey dropped him in his track. Poor boy, Preacher Casey dropped him in his track. They handcuffed Casey and they took him to jail, and then he got away, and he met Tom Joad on the old river bridge, and these few words he did say. Poor boy, these few words he did say. I preached for the Lord a mighty long time, preached about the rich and the poor. Us working folks is all get together, 'cause we ain't got a chance anymore. We ain't got a chance anymore. Now the deputies come and Tom and Casey run to the bridge where the water run down. But But the vigilante thugs hit Casey with a club. They laid Preacher Casey on the ground. Poor Casey, they laid Preacher Casey on the ground. Tom Joad, he grabbed that deputy's club, hit him over the head. Tom Joad took flight in the dark, rainy night, and a deputy and a preacher lying dead. Two men, a deputy and a preacher lying dead. Tom run back where his mother was asleep. He woke her up out of bed, and he kissed goodbye to the mother that he loved. Said what Preacher Casey said, Tom Joad, he said what Preacher Casey said. Everybody might be just one big soul. Well, it looks that way to me. Everywhere that you look in the day or night, that's where I'm a-gonna be. Ma, that's where I'm a-gonna be. Wherever little children are hungry and cry, wherever people ain't free, wherever men are fighting for their rights, that's where I'm a-gonna be. Ma, that's where I'm a-gonna be.
More from Great Speeches and Interviews after these messages.